Welcome to Verso, an arts and culture podcast from Phillips. I'm your host, Beth Lissick. On each show, we bring together two guests from the art world to have a live, socially distanced conversation about what's on their minds right now. It was bound to happen. Data science has found the art world. Today, I'm talking to the founders of ArtTicker, a new search tool exclusive to Phillips that charts the media coverage of artists on the rise in real time. It's kind of like a Shazam for the art world that harnesses the power of data science to predict market trends. I got to talk to ArtTicker's inventors, Tomasz Imielinski, a computer scientist and professor at Rutgers University, and his son, Konrad Imielinski, a data scientist. We talked about how this tool came to be and what it can do. So tell me all about ArtTicker. What does it do?
Yeah, so ArtTicker is the largest non-price database of information about artists in the world. I can say it with confidence now. And we have millions of articles which are indexed by hundreds of thousands of artists' names. And these articles come from, believe it or not, numbers differ, but it's 16,000 sources. These are literally small art blogs, newsletters, university newsletters. We index them all. And ending on the other end, New York Times art section, Hyperallergic, and you know, and Guardian, and international, you know, Le Figaro, you know, international Chinese sources. So we are all over the world, and we continuously expanding. It's a moving target. It's a database. But what do we do with it? That's a key, you know. And so one of the key points is that for each artist, we have this media index or media score, which signifies this artist's presence in the media. So that's kind of an alternative value. And so what do we do with this value? We discover trends, how artists are trending. And that's something which is very economics driven. And I will probably leave it to Konrad a little bit, because it's a media share. It's not an absolute value. It's what share of the media does this artist command?
Well, yeah, maybe to visualize it better. So essentially, we have this entire art media market. So you can think of it as one giant pie, and each artist has, you know, a slice in this pie. So we're most curious about how these slices evolve over time. And the end result is you can get kind of a long run evolution for each artist. And sometimes it goes back as far as, you know, the 1960s, the 1940s. We're trying to kind of mine all articles. We kind of have this academic rigor to this process.
Right. Can you talk about who ArtTicker is designed for?
Originally, it was meant for collectors. You know, my wife, Celina, is a collector, and she loves art, and she always would drag me to those galleries, which I really dislike, to be honest, the most, because I like art, you know, but I really don't like the sales pitches and you know, like always kind of course, focus on selling. And I would always be very doubtful about, you know, like, is this true? I mean, how is this information? Maybe it's true, you know, I'm not doubting that it's not true, but how does it compare to other artists? And my background in search engines and data mining and as a computer scientist, I was thinking, well, that should be easy to measure, right? In other words, scenario like this, I come to the gallery and I'm told about such and such artist. And the gallerist is telling me, oh, you know, it's great. It's going to be fantastic, you know, and I want to be able to check, you know, I want to be able to validate what is being told about this artist. But then later it became a tool at Phillips for specialists. And that was a pleasant finding for us, that even such experts as specialists find it useful. And we have like a loyal kind of a user base inside Phillips of specialists who look and track artists and use it.
Konrad, can you talk about how trends in the art market were previously tracked before ArtTicker? How did they come up with the valuations?
So yeah, just like the data itself they were dealing with, there were only a handful of kind of trend products which were publicly available. But the issue is that they were all relying on price, just price data. And the issue with the art market, it's an opaque market with infrequent pricing data, and majority of prices aren't even reported, especially in the primary market. There hasn't really been any promising tool. So it's like you have to look at heuristics to kind of address this issue of transparency in the market. there was also an option of just looking at exhibition data solely. So that's a nice heuristic. You can see, you know, where an artist has been exhibiting and try to create a trend from the evolution of his exhibitions. But that, again, is also very sparse. Like Amoako Boafo, kind of the current emerging star Ghanaian figurative painter, he had only one solo exhibition in 2020. So you have one data point. You can't construct a trend from this, as opposed to how we kind of thought along the process of, you know, having a data-rich alternative, which is the media. So from our perspective, you know, Boafo has been so rich in the media in 2019, 2020, you can literally contextualize his entire movement through using our data. We know that, you know, what impact did his collaboration with Dior have? What about his solo show at Robert Projects or all the talk about him at Art Basel? So we're really trying to not only quantify, but contextualize his career.
And we can go back when that artist was not famous at all. Nothing would be even recorded on the prices. And we can show the very rich history, like the pre-discovery, pre-star period. Price is one measure of the artist's success, right? But the story is another.
I just want to go back to the beginning for a minute. If you could talk about your process in developing it, and if you had like an aha moment while you were making it, realizing what it was doing.
That's a great question. I want to say the aha moment, because that is a very definite aha moment, and I'll tell you, and I think you will enjoy it. In 2017, we were in Scotland, and we were working on our ticket, of course, as we do all the time, but we were also golfing and hiking. And the name which was appearing more and more was Tshabalala Self, an incredible artist who since then made a real spectacular race, right? And we found her very early, and we're just like, who is Tshabalala Self? We looked at her art. It was beautiful, right? So Selena, my wife, she said, like, wait a minute, she has an exhibition in Glasgow. We are in northern Scotland. So why don't we drive there? She called, and they said, yeah, you know, we're big interested in her art, but we have a painting available of her, right? So Selena was like, let's go and buy it. You know, let's look at what our ticker is telling you. And I was like, yeah, but sorry, our ticker, you know, sorry. I didn't trust our ticker enough. Today, I would have done the trip, right? But then it was a beautiful day, and we went golfing, and we didn't buy that painting. And I mean, what happened later was she took the arts by storm. Her paintings are now like she's a blue chip artist practically. And I am, from my perspective, we just love her paintings. We just love her paintings. And we just didn't trust our ticker enough. So after that, what we saw, we said like, well, let's take our ticker seriously, you know?
Wow, that's a great story. Well, we talked about all the things that our ticker can do that humans can't do, processing all just enormous amounts of data. But are there sometimes that it comes up with different conclusions than humans would? So kind of measuring your right instincts against the data.
Right. So I think that a good example of what, and sometimes these are controversial examples, in 2019, someone who got tremendous amount of news was David Datuna, who ate the famous banana. Oh. Catalan's banana. He was covered all over the place, and his score before was just minuscule, right?
Yeah, can you just explain that for people who don't know about the banana?
So Maurizio Catalan, I think at Art Basel, Miami 2019, had a very talked about, very controversial piece of just exposing a banana with tape on a wall. And it being sold, I think, for $80,000. So it was a critical piece of the contemporary art market. And I think a few days later, David Datuna, a performance artist, so he's classified as an artist in our system, so he ate it. So that was his kind of performance piece. And this reaction just garnered a lot of coverage from very reputable sources. Yeah.
So, you know, so it would be based on our ticker, who were the top five names of 2019, you know, Datuna was there. And we were hesitating about, okay, well, should we really even list him there? And I remember we had discussions with our Philips colleagues, and everybody was saying, no, absolutely, you have to include him, you know.
Can you only use our ticker if you're a Philips client, or how does that collaboration work?
I showed it to a number of people, and the consensus was that would be very valuable for a single entity which can take advantage of the information. And when we met with Philips, we had this kind of meeting of the minds. So it is exclusive to Philips. The relationship is exclusive to Philips, and Philips is using it, probably number one use is internal for specialists. For example, Conrad is working with proposals department, which, you know, they have to make a pitch to a consigning, to a person who owns the art, and, you know, and they ask us for reports, which they strengthen their case. Definitely, we are very happy with specialists using this. For clients, there's a couple of ideas, but it's not yet beyond the bulletin, which we publish every day on Philips website. So it's a computer algorithm generating every day 10 names of artists who are special for whom that day is special. That's maybe not art history, but it's an art history for them. So that's the only public. The public has access to this.
So the specialists at Philips are getting this information from ArtTicker. And then in the collaboration, do you take any information from the specialists and incorporate that into your product?
We had a number of great meetings where we just asked the specialists, what would you like to see, right, in ArtTicker? And probably the most important feedback which we are acting on was the Hong Kong office, you know, in Philips, because they made us aware of how important it is for us to improve our coverage of Chinese market and also understand Chinese mm-hmm. alphabet. You know, it's not just, you know, matching against Latin names, but Chinese names. And that proved to be really challenging. I mean, a great challenge for us, you know, because, you know, how do you do it? How do you do the matching and how do you do the translation? And they helped us to jumpstart this effort by providing top publications in China. And without going into too much detail, we're working on this. This is probably going to take months still, but it's a great product because you know, it's so difficult. We like it when it's difficult because it's very difficult for others to do it, right?
So essentially we're merging now traditional Chinese, simplified Chinese into our database. I don't think there's really any products in general which kind of merge just all languages in one package. So it's like really exciting.
So could you just walk me through how ArtTicker works from the perspective of an individual user?
The feature which is most important for an individual user is search. You know, you put a name of artist you wanna follow, you wanna see what happens with that artist, and you get a so-called artist page. So Nicole Eisenman or Marco Baffo would have a page. One is I know the artist. Another one is I don't know the artist. I am looking. I am trying to discover a name. And ArtTicker will give you 25 names of those who are gaining the most attention, being in the news.
We're able to establish all these networks of artists who are related to one another just by how they're written about in those articles. So you can create this automated, you know, related artist spider network, which I think, you know, I know like Artsy done the genome project, but that's manually done. And so this is just like all algorithmically generated. And for us, it's fascinating because it's stylistically similar artists, just how, you know, they're together in the media.
I have one final, I have a wild card question for you. If you could infuse the field of computer science and data mining with a magical power, what would it be?
But if you say about fantasy, right? The fantasy would be because how is artist becoming big? You know, I was recently reading Basquiat biography, you know, and how did Basquiat became such a huge painter, now probably the biggest contemporary painter years after his death. And it is a lot to do what transactions, what who is visiting his studio, who is talking about him, who is, you know. So if you can capture, and there is more and more of this through media like Twitter and Instagram, etc. But there's so much noise, right? If I was able to filter this noise out and establish a really believable and trustable kind of trace of this, imagine being having Twitter, having Instagram during early 80s when Basquiat was taking off, you know, I bet you there would be much more information there, which I can probably, he would probably be on our radar very early.
Right. You could do like a tracking software. There he is walking down the Bowery with Madonna. And
right.
Then you would know.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That would be the dream, you know, that yes, exactly. You know, like a bit of a privacy violation, but you know, for a good use. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a dream. That's kind of a dream.
Okay. What about you, Conrad? What's your answer?
I mean, Tomáš kind of hit the nail on the head that, you know, from a nerdy point of view about, you know, natural language processing, because everyone asks, oh, okay, like how much does algorithm actually understand the articles that are being written about these artists? It's a tough, you know, question to answer. And how can algorithm understand sarcasm? Like if one person's writing a review on a particular artist, like Jerry Saltz, like, you know, it's a very complicated just way of phrasing things, and the computer still doesn't have the capabilities of understanding that. So from a kind of quantifying that complexity, that would be really cool. That's like a really fun problem to work on. Who knows who will solve it? But yeah, that would be more of like, oh, the sentiment, more of a sentiment analysis of what's being written about. For a fairy tale, I'm always fascinated by, if you go to the Louvre or you go to the Whitney, just to count the number of eyeballs that look at each specific piece, and kind of have this, you know, counter next to each painting and see more on a human level, a very creepy, just the, you know, the actual interest in real time.
Yeah, it's funny because both of the things that you guys said could probably at some point actually happen.
And this is all captured and measured because that's a main indicator, right? This early attention, you know, like Shazam. I'm thinking about like what would be a Shazam for art world, right? And Shazam is such an incredible music app, right? That people say like, who is that? You know, like I'm listening and I want to know who is that. So how many people will ask who is that about an artist? And again, if they had Artiker on their phone, they would Artikert the name. Mm-hmm. So there is a Shazam like look, you know, like a use of Artiker.
Yeah, and there's one that became a verb right away too. I'm going to Shazam that. I'm going to Artiker that. All right. We said it here first.
Yes.
Well, it's been so great talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been really
Thank
fun.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah, very fun. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into Verso, an arts and culture podcast from Philips. I hope you'll join us for our next episode. Bye for now.